Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. Our guest, the world's number one ranked doubles player, Mike Bryan, fresh from winning Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. He did that with Jack Sock. Now he's reuniting with his twin, with Bob, as they head to Australia. This was a great conversation, owing entirely to the guest. We talked about a variety of topics, reuniting with your brother, the ambivalence that Mike felt winning Grand Slams with a different partner, some of the changes in his personal life, and this was really great conversation, again, owing to Mike and his candor. So here he is.
Thanks for having me on, bud.
Hey, pleasure.
How you been?
Good. You? Yeah, everything good?
Yeah, great, man. Just in my hotel room.
Where are you? Hotel room? It's the off season.
I'm down hitting with Bob in Miami, so I need to spread out in a hotel room, need some space. But yeah, getting going, man. Starting to hit some balls.
Wait, that's a great place to. I was going to tell you first of all that it was. I looked it up. It was like exactly a year ago. Your brother came on and was terrific. And I'm going to do what your parents, your parents never did this, but I'm going to pit you guys against each other. So you got to compete against
buddy.
Bob. That's a great place to start, though. So there was a time when I suspect you and your brother would not have, you would have been sharing that hotel room. You're at a different point in your life.
Yeah. Different point in the life. Bob's got three kids. He's got his life going on over there. So got to give him some space. And I need my space too. So we're meeting during the day, getting some good hits in, hitting the gym, and his hips looking actually pretty good. It's only been 3.5 months, and he's hitting the ball pretty well. Today was like the first audition, and he passed the test. It was pretty good.
Is that how you looked at it? This was.
I was testing him a little bit. I wanted to see if he could explode out to the wide balls and get back for the overhead and. Move like an athlete, because hitting's a different story, but to try to like get out of the righty position and make these quick movements with a hip implant is not very easy. And it's only been 3.5 months, but he's been working pretty hard. So he's, it's just if it can pull up after about, a week stretch of testing it pretty hard, if he can not be sore, that's what we're looking for. So, but he's excited. I mean, he's ready to go down under. I mean, he's been itching to get back out there since Madrid, since he went down with the hip. So it's good. It's good to see.
What about the non-physical? I mean, it's been an interesting year for you guys. How's the sort of the telepathy part of this? Yeah, I was going to go even deeper than chemistry. How's your twin telepathy thing going?
Pretty good. I mean, we've chatted a lot. He's been really supportive when he's been watching a ton of the matches, and I call him right after every match, and we go through it, and he seems like he's in a good place. I mean, I think he's really motivated to try to like have a great end of the career. He wants to get back out there, and I'm still really motivated. So I think we want to get back and just have a good run to finish the career. And we just got to get back out there and do the thing again, because it's been a while. I mean, I've been playing the deuce court. Now I'm going back to the ad. And, so far, I mean, we're still getting along really well. that's the main thing, just being best friends again. And, cause we're going to share a lot of time on tour. So, I think we got that, that kind of, went away. I thought for, a few years, I thought we were struggling with, kind of the twin bond that was actually hurting for a while. So I think we're stronger than ever. He's been really, really supportive of me. So that's been great.
So I'll link this on this podcast. I don't know, maybe it was like 6 or 7 years ago. I did a long story on you guys. And the day before I saw you, I can't even remember what happened, but you got in a fight over food at a food court. I think he was like eating shrimp, and the tail flicked over and hit you, and that led to you flipped the glasses off his face, and next thing you know, you guys are like brawling in a food court.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And by the time I saw you the next day, you were back to being I think that lasted about 10 minutes, and then you were back. But do you guys still have your disputes as well?
Yeah, of course. I mean, we actually had one yesterday. You know, we had a long day. We're doing a photo shoot. You know, it was about an 8-hour photo shoot. We're driving back up, and you know, he had his phone out, and he had these expenditures that I owed him. So he's like, "You owe me $981. I want you to Venmo me." And you know, I had my list. We went back and forth, and you know, it got pretty heated. You know, and then, you know, I checked into the hotel. I moved out of the house and I checked into the hotel, but then we, you know, we talked about it, you know, and now, you know, today was fine. We had, you know, we had breakfast, lunch, probably gonna have dinner. That's just the way it works with twins. You know, sometimes you hate each other's guts, but then, you know, a couple minutes later, you're best friends. But yeah, those aren't going anywhere. We're going to still have those. It doesn't matter if we're 40, that kind of sibling rivalry thing, that's not going anywhere.
I love it. I'm curious what last year, having said that, what was last year like?
I mean, it started off great. I mean, Bob and I kind of had a resurgence. We wrote down our goals at the beginning of the year, and we put some lofty goals to, you know, kind of win some slams again and be number one. And we were doing everything, you know, right, you know, working hard, going to the gym, and then we had the success on the court, which was great because it had been a while. And then, you know, Bob goes down with the hip, and you know, I'm kind of in limbo. And he told me to actually stay out there. You know, he thought he's coming back. You know, he was like taking it week by week. So I played the French with Query, went over there, played one with Sirotani, then grabbed Jack, had some success, but still thought Bob was coming back. And then, you know, went down with the surgery, you know, and then, you know, it was like, okay, I'm going to finish the year strong with Jack, which, you know, it's obviously way more meaningful playing with Bob and, you know, having your best friend day in and day out on the road to share all those practices and matches with. There's nothing like it. I mean, Jack that was an unbelievable partnership, and really cool to play with him because, you know, we were kind of a little bit, we were friends, but we were rivals. We were playing them, you know, on tour a lot in some big matches. So to join forces with him was really cool. I mean, the guy's an unbelievable talent, can do an amazing thing. So it took a little while to mesh, you know, to, you know, try to figure out the the game plan with a guy staying on the baseline. Like, I've never played with a guy that stays back on everything and just wings forehands. And so, yeah, it ended up working out. You know, would I? I mean, I wouldn't say I completely love playing without Bob. I mean, I think that's why we've been out here for so right. long. It's because we do it together, and it's, you know, it's a family affair. You know, so winning some of these titles was amazing, but it doesn't quite feel the same. It kind of feels like there's something missing. You know, Jack and I win it. We fly to different cities, but Bob and I would always have that title to share with, you know, go home and talk about it and put the trophies up next to each other. You know, so it's, you know, looking back, it was an amazing year. And it was cool to hit number one again at 40, which I, you know, was really surprised. I didn't think really that deep down. I didn't know if I'd actually do it, you know, again. But yeah, you know, it's been a whirlwind, you know, but now it's cool to have Bob back out there. And we had our first real practice today, and it was fun just doing all of our drills again and seeing how, you know, the smile on his face and trying to get that twin energy strong before the Aussie.
what do you think? I hate to do this to you, but go ahead and I'll ask you to speak for your brother. What do you think Bob went through watching you win majors with another partner?
I mean, I got to put myself in his shoes, and if I was watching him win a lot,
yeah, right.
You know,
how would you
I
feel?
Don't know how I'd react? I mean, you have to really love your brother and be. I mean, twins are different. I mean, twins. it feels like a part of you
right.
is winning the tournament, and you're so supportive of your twin. But you know, maybe after the, you know, when I won the Open, you know, Wimbledon, he was super happy, but. Saw me win the Open and then the World Tour Finals. And, you know, he's still, I don't know if he's faking it really well, but he's, it looks like he's genuinely happy. But like, I don't know how I would be, man. It's just tough to be, watching all your brother go out to war without you when you've been doing it for the last 20 years, and every day. I think he really enjoyed being home with the family. You know, he got to take his kids to school every day. You know, he's never had 6 months in one spot, so
right,
he was a great dad. And, you got to ask him. He's been the best, it's been great. Like, he's the first one to call when I get back to the locker room, and he actually has some joy in his voice.
But it's weird, though. I mean, for you too, though. I'm hearing you say it's a considerably different experience to win majors with a partner X than with your twin and brother. It's about more than the tennis.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just so close with Bob. I mean, the feeling goes away pretty quick. Like, winning with Jack was amazing, and you have that rush. But then, the next day you're flying off, and it's kind of it's kind of wearing off. You can look back and, kind of appreciate those moments. But, it's just, once you've been doing it with some guy and you're in a part of you for so long, it's just, that's just the most natural thing to do. I mean, it's great winning and all, but to kind of see your brother, you feel bad too. It's a little bittersweet, you feel bad for Bob. I don't want to pull away in titles and grants, and you want to do it together. We're a package deal. That's what we've been doing.
That's what you signed up for.
Forever.
It's such a fascinating relationship. I mean, the other thing that I always said, and I don't want to go too far down the twin road, because I feel like at some level that diminishes the fact that you're both really, really good tennis players, and it's more than just chemistry and bonds. I mean, you're hitting the ball well and you're serving well, and in a vacuum you're both great players. But I always thought one of the real advantages to your partnership was that you guys could get pissed off at each other. I remember you guys told me one story where one of you hit the other in the, what do we say, genitals, with the butt of the racket on a changeover. And I'm thinking, if that's any other partnership, they're either fighting or one of them's walking off the court in the middle of the match, and you guys are basically having a fight during a 90-second changeover. How did you deal with friction and tension with a partner who you didn't have that kind of relationship with?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about playing with another partner is there's none of that, that negativity. Like, Bob and I, we feel free to say anything we want. He can miss a ball, and sometimes it slips out. I just say, okay, man, that backhand was terrible. Or he knows how to go below the belt. He knows exactly how to push my buttons and all my insecurities. So he'll tell me exactly what I don't want to hear, and we've had some, the highs are higher, but the lows are way lower. We had it at the Aussie Open where he almost knocked me out. Luckily no one caught it on camera, but he swung and he connected, which no one
with a punch?
No one picked it up, but I was on the ground. And he never apologized. He's like, I said, if you touch me, I'm gonna knock you out. So it's, but literally,
you,
yeah.
You didn't do that with Jack Sock, I'm guessing.
No. With Jack, I mean, it's all positive. We only played 8 tournaments. It was kind of, we were still in the honeymoon phase. Everything was fresh, exciting, and my role was just to keep him level because he's got so much talent and firepower, but he can go through these waves where he's playing unreal, and then his attention can get distracted. So I was just trying to be super supportive, and he likes the highlight. He goes for the hardest shot on the court, and I just tell him to stay free, and he goes out there and just, he kind of almost really doesn't care. He goes out there with just this free mentality. And that was kind of cool to have, because Bob and I are so focused and professional and we take it so seriously. It was kind of like a little bit less pressure, playing with Jack, which was cool. It's cool to see, but I just love the routines and doing it with Bob, because, just being together all throughout the day in the gym, and I would show up and, Jack would be at the practice court and we'd hook up. But other than that, he's doing his own thing. So it's, But I mean, to go out there and do it alone was also kind of cool to get your, you know, sort of your own identity, because we've always been the Bryan Bros, forever. Right. And you've never really fought that.
I always thought you guys were always, you guys never really fought to be like, hey, wait, I'm Mike. When people,
you were okay
as a package deal. You didn't try to clear your throat and announce yourself and differentiate yourself.
No. I mean, we're always together, you know, in eating together, whatever, you know.
Right.
Like, I didn't really even get to know most of these players because Bob was my built-in best friend, I talked to, and we'd just be going around the tour together. So now, you know, I'm out on tour alone, and, you know, and I'm doing, you know, interviews alone now. Like, this is kind of a first. And then, you know, like, just I got my own coaches to work on my game and just figure out kind of my own identity and who I really am, because, you know, when you're a package deal, you kind of lean on your brother, he leans on you, and your personalities mesh. But it was kind of good. You know, it might have been kind of a blessing in disguise. But I'm ready to get the BB train going.
Yeah. I heard a crazy rumor. Confirm or deny this one. You and your brother might be coaching Jack Sock and have some sort of a advisory relationship with him now, even though obviously he's not playing doubles with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, that's a rumor. I mean, because he threw it out there just when we were on tour. You know, he's always looking for a guy to travel with him.
Right.
And, you know, he said if Bob couldn't come back, you know, would you want to just take care of some day-to-day stuff, oversee – some matches where, you know, Mark Knowles or Mark Wolf, you know, Mike Wolf, they don't come out, you know. So he was going to maybe come down to Florida and train a little bit. But that fell to the wayside. You know, Bob and I are just, you know, way too busy, you know, doing our thing. We got, you know, we got events. We got too much stuff on our plate where we couldn't really devote. You know, if I was going to do it, you know, I wanted to do it full and try to help him as much as I can. You know, and try to give all the input, you know, everything that I know. I mean, I'd have to restudy the game of singles, but it was nice of him to ask. But you know, we've become really tight on tour. But he's you know, I think he's actually looking for, you know, a guy to travel, because Mark Knowles, he's just too busy with family and everything.
Right. It's funny. Someone told me that, and I said, really? Mike's ranked number one in the world, and they're trying to, you know, get the band back together and win more majors, and they're going to spend their hours scouting Jack Sock's next opponent. And they said, no, it's an advisory role. I said, all right, I'll ask him about
it. Yeah, we tried a little bit in Acapulco, you know, like, and it's just too many hours of the day, you know, practices and watching matches and scouting. It's just, he's potentially a top 10 singles guy, and he needs a full-time horse in his camp, you know, doing everything for him, you know, and just overseeing his ship. So,
what's he ranked a year from now?
I think he can go top 10. I mean, he's,
you think he can get back?
Just being with him day to day. I've just seen his athletic ability, his talent, his competitiveness. He's got all the tools. He just needs to probably button up a few of the daily routines, and you know, I think that just comes down to a little bit more dedication. Just, you know, like at 40, you have to kind of do everything right. You know, you got to get sleep, you got to stretch, I think he kind of saw everything I was doing. You know, I work on my body so much, I work on the mind, I work on the diet, and you know, I think he could do what like Novak did, and you know, Novak really went into every aspect of his life to play his best tennis. And you know, that's kind of what it takes. It takes like a 24-hour dedication. You know, it's having fun, but it's also you know, doing everything. You got to do everything right. If you play a long 3 to 5 set match and you end up losing it, you know, you still gotta cool down and stretch, and because that will impact your body, you know, for the next tournament, or, you know, so, I mean, I think that's just what he needs to button up. And, I mean, he actually played a really good tournament in Paris, you know, to make the quarters over there. He was playing really well. I mean, I saw his game kind of turn around. He played TM really tough in the quarters, but I mean, he's got the weapons in the game to compete with anyone. Maybe get in a little bit better shape so he can go the distance in some of the three or five set matches. But yeah, he's not going anywhere on the single story. I mean, he's going to be around for a long time and win some big ones.
You don't have to play. You got to play best out of five, but you don't have to play out the last set anymore.
That's nice. Yeah.
Did you see what Australia's putting on the table now?
No. What's the latest?
What is the latest, Jamie? It changed in the last few hours. But it's different from Wimbledon, but kind of similar. It's hold on,
okay,
I'll look it up right now.
They're playing a breaker.
There was a 10-point super tie break. It just changed literally this afternoon. So
that's pretty cool.
But anyway, I mean, basically, the one thing that's wild now is that all four majors. Yeah, it's going to be a super tie breaker at 6-6 in the final sets. How do we feel about
that? Okay. Yeah, I like that. I mean, the 10 points, a little bit less luck. 7-point breaker. At that high level, it's a coin flip. I mean, 10-point breakers, longer sample size, so it's a little bit less luck. But yeah, I like that. Let's decide the match. When it goes that deep, it's good to just get a winner and get someone off the court so they can have a chance for the next round. And the fans can see kind of a finish line. And, it's tough on the fan. I would say,
exactly.
The fan to sit in the sun for that long, I mean, for 5-6 hours, it's just, you wouldn't go to a movie for that long or a concert or
But John Isner plays Kevin Anderson, and we're strapping in. No, I think your other point is really well taken too. It wrecks you for the next round. I mean,
yeah,
Kevin Anderson had nothing for that final. No offense to him.
I was talking to Kevin, and he couldn't sleep that night. He started, his feet were so sore that he had to have his trainer come into his room at 4:30 in the morning, massage his feet. He was just so beat up, and he was so anxious about not being able to even take the court for the final that he was just a wreck.
I was gonna say, at least it's not your first Wimbledon final. Also, you'd be in perfect condition, and you still would have a rough night sleeping.
True. Yeah.
I want to ask you one more question about Sock, which is, when you see a singles guy come and make that kind of an impact and finish the year with two majors, you guys. I don't know if that's still the case. You were always very gracious, I thought, about, hey, if Rafa and Roger want to play doubles, we welcome that. The flip side, someone could say, listen, doesn't doubles get diminished when a guy like Jack Sock, who's, he's talented and athletic, but he hasn't made this his life's work, and he's very reluctant to even describe himself as a specialist, walks out of here with two majors. Where are you with singles guys coming in and having success now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, we love singles guys to play, especially the top guys. It just makes doubles bigger. The fans love it. It puts more notoriety. I mean, having Jack, jump in these slams and win them, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. I mean, hopefully some singles guys see it and they'll play more of the slam. I mean, he's always played doubles. He won Wimbledon in 2014. He's always been a great doubles player, and he loves it. He plays every week. He's one of the only guys that plays week in and week out. He likes to play with his buddies, and it's still not his number one. It's singles. He kind of only worries about, he was a little bit depressed after he had such a bad year. And I'm like, dude, you've had an unreal year in doubles. I mean, most guys would die to have your singles and your doubles. He's like, no, man, it's just, my singles has been terrible. I got to get it going. So,
you're okay with that. I mean, that's not, I failed math, but I got an A in woodshop. It's not the same, Dad. I mean, you're okay that he felt that way.
I could see it from his perspective. I mean, he's always had that primary goal of trying to be a top singles guy. And once you've tasted success and been top 10 and, won a Masters Series and gone to the Masters Cup and made the semis and beat all these guys. It's just that, you've tasted success and you want it again. Once he looks back on his career, he's going to really appreciate winning the slams. And he won the gold medal in mixed. He's always going to be a gold medalist, whatever it is. They just announced Jack Sock, gold medalist. They don't say mixed doubles, you know. It's like,
right.
So he's got a lot of accolades in the doubles, and which is really cool. And I mean, I think deep down, I think it kind of lessened the blow of a bad singles year. You know, he was pretty happy. I went out a couple nights with him after some of these slams, and he had a big smile on his face. So, he's worried about his singles. He didn't want to drop outside the top 100. He wanted to get it straight in the Aussie Open. He did that in Paris, and it was kind of big relief. You know, he didn't want to have to play challengers and quality.
He would have won that wild card would have gotten that USTA wild card anyway. But
I think
what is
so,
he? 107 though, man. That's a big number.
He definitely waited for a long time to make a run, because without Paris, it could have been ugly.
So I want to watch this transition here from one Jack to another. I saw on Instagram you did the Jack Nicklaus event again this year.
Yeah.
Is that an annual thing?
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah, second annual.
Yeah. What's the? Tell us about it. I had a photo of all the. Yeah, I saw Roddick was there. It looked like. What a great event.
Yeah, we invite a bunch of AMs to come play tennis with our buddies. We had a great lineup this year. Roddick came in, Sloane Stephens, Milos Raonic, Kevin Anderson. We had a great lineup. So it's a pro-am the first day at Jack's house on his three beautiful grass courts. And these grass courts are immaculate. They're like Wimbledon.
Williams
really
sisters
intimate.
Prepare that. You know that, right? Venus and Serena don't play tune-ups anymore. Yeah. They go to Jack Nicklaus's house.
Yeah, he's got three of them. He's lived in this house for 50 years, and he's had these grass courts there for 50 years. But he's got a grounds crew that rivals Wimbledon, and he absolutely loves tennis. He's been to some of the majors, and he supported Bob and I. So it was actually Bob and he had a meeting, a year and a half ago, and they said let's try to do something together. And he raises millions and millions for the Nicklaus hospitals, but he wanted to help our foundation out, which helps kids with tennis and education. And so we partnered, and it's cool. I don't think there's really an event like it, with the tennis one day, then the golf, and he gets great golfers like Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler and these guys. So the AM's going to play tennis with some pros, and the next day they're going to play a round of golf, and then there's dinner. And it's all really cool because it's just at Jack's place, and then the golf set is Bears Club. And it was a great event. So we're doing it again next year.
Man, I'm looking here. Francis, Gaston Gaudio. Hey, not to be –
Yeah.
Not to be too vulgar here, but that's a great – invite me next year. That's a great story. Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
Dan Berger.
Yeah, I mean, the pros are really supportive, and, it's the off-season, and no one really wants to waste a day of the off-season. But Sloane came in on a red-eye from Hawaii, 1 hour of sleep, and played the whole day. Milos came in from the Bahamas.
Can I tell you – coming in from Hawaii – for a red eye to go play golf and tennis at Jack Nicklaus's house probably doesn't trigger waves of sympathy, but good for Sloane. Good effort nonetheless.
It was a good effort because, she flew all the way to Florida. She actually got sick right after the event because she was so worn down. She had to go to the hospital. So I feel really bad. But yeah, we had Gaudio come
Jamie,
in.
Jamie, edit that out.
Gaudio he hadn't hit a ball for a long time. We had to get him a racket, some shoes, and some clothes, because he hasn't hit for so long. But it was a great lineup.
I'm going to look this up right now. Gaston Gaudio is older or younger than Bob and Mike Bryan, and he is. You want to guess?
Right on.
He's
right
younger.
On. I mean, I had to ask him. I thought he was younger, but we're the same age group. We're 78, we're both 40.
He turns. He turns 40. So Gaston Gaudio is younger than you, and doesn't have tennis clothes. Age 40 is. How are you feeling about age 40?
I'm actually feeling pretty good at age 40. I mean, I've done a lot for the body to keep it, to get the longevity. I'm kind of like a biohacker. I just figure out exactly what works for me, what diet, what supplements. I'm a little bit crazy. Bob makes fun of me, but I'm actually feeling better than I did at 25. At 25, my hips were a little screwed up. I had arthritis. They wanted to do surgery. They wanted to do Bob's surgeries on me at 25.
Really?
So I've really kind of rehabbed my hips, and I do a bunch of stuff, and in the gym, and you know, I'm always working on my body. So, you know, that's probably, you know, added up to a couple of extra years. You know,
take them.
You know, 10 years ago, no one thought anyone could even play this long. I was just working out with Ellis Ferreira, and he retired at 33, and he was ancient,
right.
at 33. So it's been pretty. I think maybe the format, playing two sets and a breaker. Also, it's just less time on court. Maybe that added some longevity to these guys' careers. You know, Nestor just retired at 46.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, for 46, you can bridge that to Social Security. I'm thinking you're hacking your body. Bob's like, you know, Bob's eating Go-Gurt and he's picking the extra fries off his kid's plate, like all parents
I mean,
do. And you're
still hasn't bought into my type of lifestyle. I mean, he takes the kids to Mickey D's and Taco Bell and. Yeah, he's never stretched a day in his life. You know, he just doesn't want to waste the time to do it. So
he's only covering he's only got the ad court. You know, I want to stop you because I want to give you guys credit. You know, one thing that you've both of you guys did that I always thought was really cool when they initiated and instituted these changes to scoring. Whenever it was, I mean, this was like 8, 10 years ago. You guys were pretty vocally opposed to it, and. Both of you guys have said, listen, we were wrong. Like, tip of the cap, this has extended our career. The matches, yeah, every now and then you get a little bit of a shotgun match and a guy hits a lucky shot and it's too bad that it's a shootout. But overall, the better team prevails. You guys really, and I thought it was very big of you guys really kind of very publicly reversed your stance. You're okay with these formats now, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, back then, I think it was maybe 2005 when they brought the changes. I mean, we were opposed to it. We were number one and, you know, having great years. We didn't want to change anything, you know. I mean, we thought it would bring an element of luck, you know.
Right,
there's times where we win, you know, 15 to 20 more points but still lose the match. I doubt that would ever happen in singles. And the margins are so fine in doubles where, you know, you play just one loose game and, you know, the first game of the match and then you lose the first set and you're playing a breaker for the third. So it's added maybe a little bit of like stress, but if you look at the whole sample of the year, still the best teams are up there. You'll have some frustrating ones where you'll fly all the way to Asia and you'll lose a heartbreaker where you thought you outplayed a team and you're on a flight the next day looking at the stats and you're like, wow, we did outplay them. We did win 10, 15 more points, but we ended up losing a breaker. You know, so you have those, but it has shuffled itself out, and I think it has been better for the game. I think the fans like it. They like seeing that super breaker. It's made it shorter so the singles guys can jump in and play more often. So, yeah, it's been a good thing. I mean, it could be stressful.
I think honestly, when you see guys playing into their 40s, maybe this is a reason. But I always thought it was, I always thought it showed a lot of character that you guys were both like, listen, we were skeptical, and now we've bought in. We're almost at our wrap here. Tell first of all, take this wherever you want. Go as in depth or not in depth as you want. But give people where would you say you are in personal life now? I mean, how do you describe yourself? Go again. Take this wherever you want, but what's going on with you?
Okay, yeah, I'm at actually a happy place. You know, last year was kind of a tough time. It you know, at the end of the year, you know, I was going through a divorce, you know, and it was a strain. I mean, it's not an easy time, and you know, we also were, you know, having a tough time. Bob and I, we weren't getting along. Kind of our families were a little bit split. You know, I was on the West Coast, he was East Coast. Felt like we couldn't really spend a lot of time just because there's a lot of friction there. And then, you know, got divorced and met a great woman. And it's been a great, amazing year. We've traveled. I've been going nonstop. I've when I'm not off the tour, I've been also just trying to live life to the fullest and been going on vacations. And, you know, I've hit, you know, so many new cities. I went to like Marrakesh on an off week. I just got back from Iceland. I went, you know, down to Necker Island, you know, Tulum, Mexico. So just been having a blast, you know, just trying to get out and about and it's probably been the best year of my life, you know.
Really?
And I think you have to kind of be happy to play well on the court. And, you know, I'm really happy in my personal life. And that's kind of translated to good tennis. And you just, I don't know. You just play better. You have more energy. You know, like the last few years when things weren't going great in my relationship, you know, I just felt like I was just a little bit more down, and, you know, I'd be taking a break point, and it's just tough to focus. And Bob could sense it. And, you know, that was kind of breaking our energy to pieces. But now it's been a complete, 180. It's been amazing. And, that's it in a nutshell. It's just, I'm just a lot happier than I was. And so it makes me kind of appreciate the tour. And I bring Nadia, who's from New York. She comes out with me, and she's experiencing the tour from fresh eyes, and she loves it. And so that's what's keeping me kind of going and wanting to play. You know, it's so fresh for her and exciting to her too. And she's been so supportive. It's been a nice turnaround from about a year ago. You know, it all happened around this time last year.
Reassure me, and I say this from the point of view of a writer, but reassure me you can appreciate how rich a story this is narratively. That these two guys, they were born 2 minutes apart, now they're at different points in their lives, but they're reuniting at age 40 and still trying. I mean, can you step outside this and recognize what a remarkable story this is?
Yeah, I mean, we thought we were inseparable, and, you know, we thought there would be nothing that could break up the bond, but it kind of disintegrated with our personal lives, not aligning. And then, you know, that there was just some dark years where we just both weren't having fun. We'd be staying in the same hotel, but we'd never see each other. We wouldn't be sharing meals together. And that's kind of what gave us the edge over most teams, is that we felt like one when we were on the court. We're like a two-headed monster, you know? And then we lost that. I was, you know, not in a happy place. And then, you know, it all came full circle, and now we're kind of back. Bob's coming back from an injury, and hopefully we can have a great last chapter. I mean, that's what we want to do.
Great story. All right, I'm going to say you and Bob, you did this to a draw, but
okay, thanks,
that was great. It was it's always a pleasure, and again, I say this objectively, it's a great story, but best to you guys. You've pulled ahead of your brother in majors, and I suspect he may never catch you, but if you can get a few more together, you both win. So
thanks for having me on,
man.
John. I appreciate it. All right, buddy.
See you in Australia. Take care. See you, buddy.
Okay, see you down under. Bye.
All right, thanks to Mike for a great conversation. Number one ranked doubles player in the world. He will try and sustain that ranking, but with a new partner. A familiar one, though, his brother, Bob. Jamie, I don't know if you have had the experience of I remember you heard Bob last year, but have you had the experience of speaking to these guys?
I have, actually. I talked with them when they were here for the US Open. I guess it was this year or the previous year.
Oh, right,
year.
When they did the event in the basement here.
Yes, right. But also at a different event.
Okay.
So we actually took a selfie together. There was a lot going on there. But they're great. They're awesome when they're together, but they are equally as awesome when they are separate, as we've shown on this podcast. So.
I got to tell you, I'm dating myself, but this first time I talked to them must have been 20 years ago when they were first, they came out of Stanford, and everyone made their twin jokes and double twins and wonder twin power, and it was this easy story, and we all took advantage of it. They have remained as cool and gracious and accessible, and they've had a lot of success. I mean, these guys are to doubles what, you know, Federer and Serena are to singles, and yet they are thoroughly familiar. They've been through a lot, huh?
I like your point about how they operate as the Bryan brothers, and they're totally cool with that, but then they're also okay kind of developing their own thing, but they never push that, which is interesting, because when you have twins, they always try and push away the duo, and they always want to be their own individual.
Assert yourself. Differentiate yourself.
But they really never were like that. Maybe it's because of the nature of doubles.
They used to joke. I mean, they would go on the road. They'd share an ATM card. They shared a car. They would share a hotel room.
I think they shared a Twitter.
They shared a Twitter account. I mean, the rumor that they have a disagreement with some family members about whether toothbrush was included in the list of common items. But these guys, they said to me once, if Bob ever got married, I'd have to like build a zip line so I could still see him. And we talked about how, this was a while ago, we talked about how hard it must be to be in a relationship with them, because it's almost like no matter what happens, there was still going to be someone else other than your spouse who they were going to be closer to. And clearly that's changed. I mean, clearly the dynamics of their relationship are quite different now, and Bob has three kids, and Mike's going to Iceland and to Tulum. But they are going back out there at age 40, and I think we are going to, I always said this about Serena. We all knew the story, and yet Venus and Serena still is the most underrated sports story today. I'm not sure this one isn't up there as well. But
they're good sports about it, too. I think they don't really ever try to make it seem like they're not twins, or they, you know, as much as apparently they dislike each other at times, they really embrace the brotherly love. So I thought it was interesting to hear about how he dealt with having a new partner, and he said, well, I have to put myself in Bob's shoes,
right,
if that
right,
was
right,
me.
Right.
So I thought that was an interesting response. I didn't realize how different they were in terms of Mike being so focused on healthy eating and all of that, and Bob being the complete opposite.
Well, the other, I mean, at one point, and again, this is, I didn't want to make Bob answer for his brother and buy into this this relationship that we're now trying to rail against, but I mean, at one point, I think Bob was not far from saying it's been a great career, and I think Mike wanted to continue. It's interesting, and I don't know if it was a function of taking time off and having an injury and maybe recognizing how much the sport meant to you. I don't know how much of it might have been watching your brother still win these majors, but a few years ago, it looked like this partnership was dwindling, and good on them. They were in their late 30s, and again, one of them was married with children, and see you at Newport at the Hall of Fame. And now it seems like Bob is reinvigorated. I mean, I also think, I wish I had him in front of me. The stats on twins are really remarkable. I think a lot of it is in vitro fertilization. But the proportion of twins has just skyrocketed. Again, I think a lot of that owes to technology. I think their experience, I mean, I think they have a second career really talking about this twin dimension, because it's something that, I mean, they have these crazy stories about how they both call each other. A lot of times they'll be on different sides of the country and they will call each other simultaneously because they will both have the urge to call the, I mean, there's some creepy, there's some wacky, wacky stuff. And they'll have the same dreams.
Can I tell you a secret?
Tell me a secret.
I think, or my parents think, that I was supposed to have a twin.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did not expect you would say that. What makes them suspect?
There was like when my mom gave birth, there was like physical evidence that there could have been a twin, but it did not survive, or whatever the case was. But it's a running joke in my family that they would not be able to survive if there was two of me around.
You and your to take that to an even stranger place. Remember, I think it was Tyler Hamilton. Remember the cyclist who blamed the his positive doping test on a vanishing twin?
I do remember that, yes.
You've got a built-in alibi if you ever have some PED issues. But no, I just think this twin experience is something that you and I just
won't get. Yeah.
You'll never get it. The disputes that they have, I mean, again, they won Wimbledon, and the night before the final, they tell the story of one of them smashed the other's guitar, and they had a fight, and they thought one might need stitches. And then 10 minutes later, they're thick as thieves and they're winning majors. Not a lot of other doubles teams have that relationship.
No, you can go on YouTube and look up the videos of them just being like weirdly in sync with movements on the court, you know, just waiting for the ball, things like that. It's there's definitely compilations of it.
I gotta post this story because it's one of the favorite pieces I've written, and it wasn't, I don't say this to brag, it was all because Bob and Mike were so generous and so interesting. But I remember at one point I was talking to them, and I said, do you guys ever like just want to be different from the other? I mean, it was at the point where these guys are in their 30s and people would say, hey, Bob, and both of them would turn around. I said, do you ever want to just say, listen, I'm Mike, he's Bob, we're two different people, stop conflating us, we're not conjoined twins, stop conjoining us in your head. And they both looked at me like I asked them if they wanted to, you know, quit tennis and go be short order cooks. I mean, it was the strangest question to them. I think from a marketing standpoint, it's probably helped them. And they, you know, a lot of times they wear the same attire, and everyone, again, has their cute twin pun. But I think this is something that goes much deeper. And I think that it's great that they are finishing their careers together. I mean, I also think we've all sort of glossed over this, but it's a little strange to win two straight majors, you know, seven figures in prize money, get back to number one, and say, yeah, I'm ditching my partner for a 40-year-old who's coming off an injury. it doesn't sound like a whole lot of doesn't sound like that was a particularly difficult decision for Mike to make, but it's a little strange.
We might have to get Jack Sock on here for some feedback on how he feels.
I would hope that they would say, listen, happy to play with you, but just so you know, if Bob's healthy, he's my guy. But not often you win back-to-back majors and ditch your, whatever Jack is, 28-year-old partner for a 40-year-old coming off a hip injury. But anyway, great to see the Bryans back. We will have a new guest before the end of the year. I can't guarantee it's next week, but we've got a couple of guests that we are working on. But as for now, thank you so much to Mike Bryan. Always good talking with both Bryan brothers. And Jamie, thanks as always for your producing and your expertise.
Thank you.
All right, we'll do it again next week. If people were so inclined, where might they go to subscribe, listen, or leave a review to this podcast?
You still don't know.
I'm just setting you up. I'm like a doubles team. I'm giving you a
just kidding.
They can go on overhead.
They can go on Apple Podcasts and they can subscribe and leave a review.
Good poach. All right, that does it for us. Have a good week, everyone.